Now, in 2004, President Bush established a 9-person commission to set out a way for humans to explore the Moon, Mars, and beyond. In our previous 67 programs here on the Space Show covering the public hearings conducted by the Commission, the beyond part of the vision has received little attention. In this episode, we focus on astrophysics and the search for Earth-like planets that could be habitable. In his introduction of the three expert panelists, Commission Chairman Pete Aldridge refers to fellow Commissioner Neil Tyson. That's because Tyson is an astrophysicist. And his day job is director of New York's Hayden Planetarium. His professional research interests include star formation, exploding stars, and the structure of the Milky Way. By the way, I met Neil Tyson at the Kennedy Space Center on April the 15th and recorded an interview with him, which we will have on the Space Show a bit later. But anyway, back to the Moon, Mars, and Commission. And as Pete notes, a session on the future of astrophysics within the Moon, Mars, and Beyond project is right up Tyson's alley.
We have another panel coming forth now, which we've titled Astrophysics for the Beyond. I think maybe Neil Tyson probably thought this title up. This is a rather large subject, obviously, but we welcome three experts in the field, and I'll introduce them as they're coming forth. Catherine Pilakowski is the president of the American Astronomical Society. She holds the Kirkwood Chair in Astronomy from Indiana University and has 20 years' experience on the science staff at the National Optical Astronomy Observatory in Tucson. William Smith is the president of the Association of Universities for Research in Astronomy, known as ARA, and brings over 20 years' experience in science management and policy to the post. Before his appointment to ARA, Dr. Smith served in various capacities with the House Committee on Science and also served with the Federal Aviation Administration. David Spergel is a professor in the Department of Astrophysical Science at Princeton University. He's also a member of the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy probe team, which found the oldest existing light in the universe. And he was part of the Space Interferometry Mission Project Office. In his spare time, he serves as chair of the NASA Origins Subcommittee and member of the Space Science Advisory Council. Mrs. Pilatrowski, would you start, please?
Certainly.
Welcome.
If I could have, thank you, the first slide. Chairman Alderson, members of the Commission, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I speak on behalf of the American Astronomical Society and the nation's astronomers who carry out research at the forefront of astronomy and astrophysics. We also teach at the nation's colleges and universities, and I and my colleagues are very active as well in K-12 outreach through curricular materials and meeting with the public. For the members, the next slide, please. For members of the AAS, scientific research is the most fundamental form of exploration. It's no coincidence that throughout history, exploration and scientific progress have gone hand in hand. The next slide, please. Throughout NASA's own illustrious history, exploration and research have been closely linked. The list of scientific achievements enabled by our partnership includes some of the most profound questions of the 20th century. When the president first announced his new vision for NASA, most professional astronomers held their breath. NASA's resources are limited, and the relatively small proportion that directly funds astronomy research can be easily swept aside by a major redirection of the agency. We all began to breathe again when Administrator O'Keefe made it clear that scientific research would continue to play a major role in NASA's future. And this has been verified in the president's fiscal year 2005 budget submission. The president's vision of NASA inspires us to think bigger. Could I have the next slide, please? About the future of astronomy and astrophysics. Only a few years ago, we thought we knew something about the structure and origin of the universe. But today we know that less than 5% of the universe is visible to us. We have no knowledge of the 95% of the universe dominated by dark matter and dark energy. And many of our most pressing questions require observations from outside Earth's atmosphere, either because of wavelength requirements or the need for low background or the need for very high spatial resolution that can only be achieved from space. Many witnesses at these hearings have testified of the lost vision of Apollo. This time, the vision must transcend short-term goals. With the development of new and more robust space infrastructure, including new robotic and telerobotic capabilities, opportunities for exploration naturally beckon. Space infrastructure can be a tool for exploration, and that exploration naturally leads beyond the Moon and Mars and beyond the solar system. Could I have the next slide, please? At the same time, we're challenged to sustain the ongoing exploration of the universe that has been one of NASA's most visible and successful programs. Already, the redirection of NASA's research efforts has had an impact on research. The Beyond Einstein initiative to test Einstein's theory of relativity has already seen reductions and delays that threaten the existence of these programs. Research to understand the connections between the Sun and the Earth and the impact and possible threat of the Sun to the Earth, those programs have also been reduced somewhat. How can NASA achieve and retain a healthy balance between space science and human exploration? The National Research Council's report, Issues and Opportunities Regarding the U.S. Space Program, stressed the importance of the interplay between science and exploration and urges NASA to apply the principles of balance and complementarity. Historically, NASA's role in astronomy has been to provide the space tools needed to address the important scientific problems. Could I have the next slide, please? With this view, both science and exploration can thrive to the benefit of each, with creative tension between them rather than conflict. What form will a program of astronomical exploration take? There have been many studies about telescopes on the moon, and many studies and great technical developments for free-floating space observatories. But I think at the moment we don't know enough to make decisions about what the right directions are for the future, whether that be on the moon or in space. What are needed are detailed studies of the technologies, costs, and benefits of doing astronomy in these locations. Thus, we recommend that NASA's implementation plan call for an assessment of how best to take advantage of the new space infrastructure to conduct scientific exploration of the universe. This commission is also right to be concerned with the sustainability of a long-term vision of exploration. Next slide, please. Superficially, NASA's program enjoys broad public appeal. The Mars rover websites see millions of hits per week, and the Hubble Space Telescope website has recorded hundreds of billions of independent visits. We see that NASA produces and space science produce 8% of scientific discoveries worldwide in 2003. That's an extraordinary accomplishment. It's easy to excite kids about planets, black holes, and space travel. Yet even the huge popularity of HST and the Mars rover program is not sufficient to sustain public support for a broad program of exploration. I teach introductory astronomy at a large Midwestern university, at Indiana University. And those kids who were once excited about black holes and space travel come into my classroom with a very different perspective. They find themselves as young adults faced with issues like cancer, AIDS, poverty, racial discord, war, global warming, environmental pollution. And as many of us did at that age, they sense a responsibility to address those problems in some way. They're not persuaded by the manifest destiny of humans in space, and they don't believe that space exploration contributes to economic, social, or technical progress. Could I have the next slide, please? It's easy to excite kids, but it's important to target those skeptical young adults with this new vision, to help them understand why it's important. They see space exploration as irrelevant to their lives and to the solution of problems on Earth, and they'd prefer that their tax dollars be spent solving or at least addressing those problems. To engage the public over the long haul, could I have the next slide, please? NASA needs to articulate the economic, social, technical, and intellectual value of its exploration program in a way that appeals to young adults. Astronomy has seen much in the universe, and we have much to contribute to this task by providing a constant stream of new discoveries enabled by space exploration. The broader science element of this program really does help to sustain interest in the long haul. I want to add one additional comment to this long vision, and that is that part of the vision is to search out planets and life on other solar systems. Within the next few decades, we will have the capability to send a probe to other stars. That probe may take 100 years to reach those stars. We really are talking about a long-term program of sustainability to explore the universe. The astronomical community is excited about this vision and appreciates the chance to participate in these hearings. We stand ready to assist the Commission and NASA to make the President's new vision for discovery into reality. Thank you.
The views of Catherine Pilichowski, the president of the American Astronomical Society. She was speaking at a public hearing in New York City of the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. The topic of the day at this commission is astrophysics for the beyond. The next speaker is William Smith, who is president of the Association of Universities for Research in Astronomy. He honed right into the oft-overlooked beyond part of President Bush's announcement that set up this commission. Smith addressed several pertinent and often discussed issues. For example, back in the 1950s, it was assumed that we would build observatories on the moon. The reality has seen telescopes such as the Hubble Space Telescope flying freely in low Earth orbit. In his testimony, delivered in 2004, Smith refers to another servicing mission to the Hubble Space Telescope. At the time he spoke, in 2004 May, it had been announced that it was too dangerous to send a shuttle to repair Hubble and that it would be abandoned when it eventually broke down. Since that time, a new NASA administrator reversed that decision and the repair and upgrade mission was conducted in 2009, that's last year, and is now the subject of that new IMAX movie which is coming out, which is Hubble 3D. So here we go then, listening now to the testimony on the beyond part.
Members of the Commission, I appreciate the opportunity to present a statement on behalf of the Association of Universities for Research in Astronomy. We are an organization that represents most of the large astronomy programs in the university community. As it turns out, one of our long-term goals, which we have discussed a great deal internally, resonates very strongly with at least one portion of the vision, and I'll quote, to conduct advanced telescope searches for Earth-like planets and habitable environments around other stars. Therefore, we feel we have a stake in this, and we have spent a considerable amount of time discussing within AURA how we might make this successful, and I will summarize the three or four major outcomes of our discussion. But before that, I would like to acknowledge, I know this is your last hearing, I'd like to acknowledge the extraordinary efforts that the Commission has gone to include a wide spectrum of public viewpoints in the course of your work. This really does recognize that the space program has traditionally had a very strong ownership by the public and touches many segments of our society. The science community and astronomers as a subset are really only a small part of this public representation, and I would not claim that we are the most important group you should listen to, but we do have a special significance that I think you should pay attention to, and that is that, and I want to hearken back to the report that Katie mentioned, Issues and Opportunities in the Space Program. I think that report made a very good case for the fact that the science community has a special responsibility for formulating a high-quality and productive program where the goal happens to be science. And ultimately, the productivity of this federal investment is going to be a factor in the long-term political support, and therefore the engagement of the science community will be of paramount importance. Given that, then, the question that we asked ourselves is, how can we make this part of the exploration initiative most productive? There certainly has been discussion going back to the Apollo era regarding building major telescopes on the moon, major observatories on the moon. And I would agree with Katie that this requires much further study, but I would say that the discussion thus far within AURA, and this has been a very active discussion, is that on balance, there are probably more disadvantages than advantages. And I wouldn't say that there is naturally occurring strong support for this idea, partly because that the fact that the advantages of conducting astronomical observations in low Earth orbit and deep space have been proven conclusively, wildly beyond what I think original expectations would be. And increasingly, the advantages of the Earth-Sun Lagrangian points are emerging as also very highly desirable, as is evidenced by our planning for the James Webb Space Telescope. So we are looking at this as our main route towards achieving this part of the vision, which is encompassed by the beyond part of that statement. And so what investments do we think might be necessary, and how do they relate to the other parts of the vision? A major opportunity is offered by this new vision for the development of a robust and capable robotics program that can construct and service satellites in low Earth orbit and deep space. Obviously, a part of this vision that the president articulated did involve moving humans beyond low Earth orbit, and I think everybody credits that as a very important thing to hold in mind. Science will probably remain in deep space and low Earth orbit, so this is a special consideration you should have. It doesn't appear to me, but perhaps it bears further scrutiny as to whether this in-space robotics program is a major feature of the current plan, but we all know this plan will evolve, and it could be a major feature of the vision. This could have strong synergies with what the obvious robotics needs are for surface rovers. In fact, there is a strong connection between this concept and the current problem that ORA is very much engaged in, and that is the problem of servicing the Hubble Space Telescope. And we are already beginning to see through NASA studies that robotic servicing that can even go to the point of replacing instruments is something that certainly should be pursued. If you look at the studies that are emerging so far, this investment is not small. It is large. But clearly, this would be made more valuable if placed in this larger context, and this were the beginning of an investment in space robotics, a space robotics capability that has, frankly, long been needed. The National Academy, as you know, will be conducting a deep and rich study of HST servicing, and surely this will receive a great deal of attention by them. Finally, I would address a matter, if I were to single out one source of discomfort in the science community, is probably this, and that is that the plan or the vision that has been articulated thus far is something that they would very much need to be involved in terms of the planning. The space science community has a very well-developed approach towards strategic planning, and I think this could be a great benefit to implementing this vision. So I would say there must be consideration of a better way to engage the science community in this planning process. And again, I think this report, Issues and Opportunities, made the case that the interaction and creative tension between NASA and the science community has been a very major factor in the success of the space science program so far. So again, this should be part of the planning process. I will close with that and answer any questions.
The president of the Association of Universities for Research in Astronomy, William Smith. On this evening's space show here on Southern FM, we are in New York at a public hearing of the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. Attention has turned to the beyond part of President Bush's vision for America's future in space. The third witness to address the nine commissioners was David Spergel. He is a professor in the Department of Astrophysics at Princeton University. His interest is the search for Earth-like planets. Although many Jupiter-sized planets are now known to orbit stars, finding small Earth-sized planets is a much more challenging task. Such planets, which could possibly harbor life, are known as terrestrial planets.
I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to talk to you about the implications of the President's initiative for astrophysics. The President's initiative not only provides direction for the manned space program and for planetary exploration, but also reinforces NASA's ongoing program of the search for life in planets beyond our solar system. The search for extrasolar planets is a quest that excites both the general public and the broad scientific community, and will be an important part of our scientific legacy for future generations. NASA has already embarked on a long-term program of detecting Earth-like planets, characterizing their atmospheres and searching for signs of extrasolar life. This long-term program will also yield other important astronomical results, as these telescopes are used to study the formation of planets, stars in our own galaxy, as well as look back in time to study the first stars, galaxies, and quasars. Missions now under construction should yield results that I think will stir the public and reinforce support for NASA's program of space exploration. Sometime in the next decade, we will read a headline that says, "We have discovered a planet like Earth around a nearby star." We have a series of missions now underway, Kepler, SIM, among others, that have the capability of detecting these planets if they exist around nearby stars. And from what we know about Jupiter-sized planets, they're going to be there. What's, I think, even more exciting as we look forward to the future, can I have the next slide, please, is we will have the opportunity not just to detect these planets, but to characterize them. There has been remarkable progress in the laboratory in the last couple years in the ability to develop the technologies needed to detect Earth-like planets. And guided by the new vision and enabled by the rapid advances in technology, NASA has recently decided to take the next big step in the search for life beyond the solar system. NASA has announced plans to build a pair of telescopes, the Terrestrial Planet Finder, that will image planets around nearby stars and characterize their surface temperatures. The first of these telescopes, called TPFC, is a large optical telescope, 4 by 6 meters, that uses a coronagraph to block the light of a star so that it can image planets around that nearby star. The second mission, called TPFI, will be a constellation of satellites operating in the infrared and able to cancel the bright light of the star through interference. TPFI will be carried out in collaboration with our partners in ESA. The combination of these telescopes will be particularly powerful in characterizing the properties of these extrasolar planets. TPFC will detect the starlight directly scattered off the surface of the planet and off of clouds in the atmosphere. TPFI will detect the heat radiated from the planet's surface. The combination of these two missions may well produce the major scientific discovery of the following decade: the detection of an Earth-sized planet around the nearby star with oxygen atmosphere, a water ocean, and teeming with life. For if a nearby planet has oxygen or surface water, these missions would be able to detect it. These telescopes can also yield a host of important astronomical discoveries. TPFC will have 36 times the sensitivity of the Hubble telescope and 3 times its angular resolving power. With a small investment of additional instrumentation, it will be able to make important contributions to cosmology, extragalactic, and galactic astronomy. Go to the next slide, please. I think as a participant in the TPF program, I think it's an interesting model to think about in how to rapidly develop an ambitious technical program. Rather than begin with a point design, what NASA and JPL did was award 4 contracts to industry-led teams consisting of engineers and scientists from industry, academia, and NASA centers. I was part of the ball team. We developed 60 different possibilities, really wide-ranging set of initial ideas. We then presented them, focused in on the 8 most interesting ideas. Each team developed their own version. A lot of novel approaches came out of this. The whole idea of building the coronagraph was not part of NASA's initial plan. This was not how they were going to do it. But this new idea emerged. Technology advanced quickly, and as a result, we're going to get to where we want to go: the ability to detect Earth-like planets much faster, and I think much cheaper, because we were flexible. We define things by asking where the goals are, and then working together with the science community, industry, and NASA, finding the best way to go. Where do we go? Okay, the next slide. Where do we go next in the search for life beyond our solar system? Many of us envision a Life Finder mission capable of directly detecting the signs of life itself on extrasolar planets, and a terrestrial planet imager able to directly image continents and oceans on these distant planets. While these futuristic missions are still decades away, they'll require our investment in developing several technologies now in their infancy: ultralightweight optics, precision formation flying, and a new generation of sensor detectors. These new technologies will also enable TPFI and other missions planned for the near term. In the recent past, CODAR technology guided NASA's investments in space technology. Working with CODES, CODAR had developed a roadmap for investing in these key technologies. With the establishment of CODE-T, the exploration code, this program has lost much of initiative and some of its funding. My colleagues working on developing a number of these key technologies, like lightweight optics and constellation satellite flying, tell me that their funding has been reduced as they feel the need to focus on the moon program. But these long-term programs are an essential part of the and beyond. And if we want to get there, we have to be careful not to eat our seed corn and to continue the investments in the long-term technology needed for the exploration initiative. And finally, to echo comments of my colleagues, astronomy, of course, is much more than just the search for extrasolar planets. Over the past four decades, NASA has made major discoveries that have not only deepened our understanding of the universe, but stirred our imagination. Among the most notable, the discovery of black holes, small and large, the realization that the dark matter is ubiquitous, composing not only the dominant component of our galaxy, but of all galaxies, galaxy clusters, convincing evidence that our universe is accelerating, and the detection of the echoes of the Big Bang and the cosmic microwave background. These discoveries are only possible in the unique environment of space. One of the negative impacts of the Moon-Mars initiative has been the delays in the Beyond Einstein program, the CONEX mission, LISA. These early NASA's experiments have already shown that we only know what makes up 4% of the mass of the universe. We don't know what 96% of the stuff is. And one of the great forefront problems in science, and certainly in physics, is figuring this out. And if we are to maintain our leadership, and I know I was really shocked to see the numbers in the New York Times yesterday showing the decline in our leadership in physics, we're going to have to stay at the cutting edge of cosmology, which is one of the most exciting and vibrant areas of physics. As a director of our graduate program, I can tell you that when I look at our applications, both in the U.S. and abroad, this is the area that attracts a lot of the best physics students. And we look at our undergraduates, the questions, what are black holes, how did the Big Bang start, how old is the universe, these are questions that really excite and attract the best students to science. And I think it's important to maintain the diverse program that includes that. I was particularly disappointed by the cuts in the Explorer program, which I view as one of NASA's most successful and effective programs. It's a model of efficiency and high science return for the dollar. I was part of NASA's Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe, which imaged leftover heat from the Big Bang. Our discoveries yielded measurements of the age of the universe and its composition. And Discovery Magazine last year noted the Columbia disaster as the number one science story of the year, but picked us as number two. And Science Magazine hailed our results as the science result of the year. The full cost of this high-profile mission was less than 1% of NASA's budget for 1 year. And despite these successes, the Explorer program has just been cut, and we've eliminated a future mission like that. To conclude, the new exploration initiative provides important support and direction for the search for life beyond the solar system. NASA has already taken important steps towards realizing this vision. I think that this search for planets beyond our solar system, the search for life on these planets, will be one of the jewels of the exploration initiative. Yet to fully realize the promise of this initiative, we're going to need to continue to make long-term investments and not make the mistake of cutting funding for these long-term needs to get to our short-term goals quickly. I think we also need to support the broad space science program. It's been one of the jewels in NASA's crown, and something that I think will be important to our ongoing scientific leadership. Thank you.
Princeton University's professor of astrophysics, David Spergel. He was sharing his thoughts on how the search for planets might fit within the Moon, Mars, and Beyond vision. Well, this evening on The Space Show, we have heard the views of three eminent astronomers and astrophysicists on how their discipline could advance mankind's push to explore space. This provoked many questions from the nine commissioners, and we will hear that discussion in episode 69 of our documentary series bringing you the Moon, Mars and Beyond hearings. These programs were researched, written and edited by Andrew Rennie using audio provided by the commission.